All right, we were just at the start of a kind of a fun question. If you want to look, I think you're on page 4 in most of the handouts. We'd gone through, right, the topic here, right, faithful parenting, establishing authority. And we'd been talking through the commands. Gee, there says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And so the question is, to what extent must children obey their parents? So let's look at a couple of verses, and then we'll kind of maybe see if we have any comments. So let's turn to Acts 4, if you would. Open up to Acts 4. There's actually a couple of places here close by. Any volunteers for reading this morning? Carson, why don't you take Acts 4:19-20. Go ahead.
Acts 4:19-20. Mm-hmm. But Peter and John answered and said to them, whether it is right in the sight of God to heed you rather than God, you be the judge. For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard.
That's good. Okay. And then go ahead and turn over also to chapter 5 and verse 29.
But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men.
Yeah. So what's our basic principle here when you think about children obeying their parents? Are there any times when they could disobey their parents? Abe, yes?
I mean, yep. Ultimately, their highest authority is the Lord.
Uh-huh.
So if their parents are actively telling them to do something that is sinful and directly contrary to
God's
word,
yeah.
Then, yeah.
That's right.
There's room.
Yeah, you go to an amusement park, and there's a kids' rate.
Kids' rate.
For 12-year-olds, and you're 13, and your dad says, tell them you're 12.
Right. You drive in your own car. Yeah, so there is that sense in which you are under their authority in that one exception. Now let's also look at Colossians 3. Everybody turn to Colossians 3. It's kind of the sister verse of the children obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. So Colossians 3:20. Dan, you want to read that one?
Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord.
Yeah, so one thing I've been thinking about a little bit is that we have talked before about how you can think about, or my picture a lot of times is, you know, God's will is a circle, and there's, inside that circle, there's freedom to do a variety of different things in your life, right? So outside of that circle, we have sin, right? And then inside of their circle, there's certain things that we must do. Okay, that if we go outside that circle, it would be a sin. But there's certain things that you have freedom to do, right? Whether you buy a red car or a blue car, or whether you eat this or that, right? There's lots of things where you don't have to do those things, but doing them is not a sin. Was that tracking with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
So when we're placed under relationships of authority, what that does is those people that are under God's authority, and when God has given us the ability to direct them, okay? So let's say you have a kid that comes home at 11 p.m., right? They come home at 11 p.m., and the question is that, are they free to do that? Okay, well, that kind of depends. Right? Is that a sin or not? Can you think of a scenario where that would be a sin?
Curfew is 10.
Their curfew is 10. The parents say, come home before 10. Does that make sense? Can you think of a scenario where they're fine, free to do that?
They're at work, and the parents know, and they work till 11.
Parents are okay with that, right? So what happens is, when we think about our parenting, we have to realize there's kind of some serious implications in terms of whether or not, right, what is our particular set of directions, and commands, if you will, to our kids, because that will impact for them whether or not they can be obedient or disobedient to those commands. I was thinking too, if you have a parent that's like this, right?
Yeah.
That's like the permissive parent, right? They're fine with you doing all this, but they're also fine with all this sin, right? And you might have a parent that's maybe like super controlling. Does that make sense? Like, you must do this, you must do this, you must do this. There's no freedom, right? So you kind of want to recognize that there is a lot of implication in terms of what you tell your children that they must do. Because, again, you're God's representative, you're God's, right? What do you think about that? Do you think it's more difficult, right? Is it more difficult to, like, prevent being permissive or prevent being kind of controlling, domineering?
Probably depends on the person.
Or the issue?
Yeah, I would tend more towards overly strict.
And a lot of us tend to parent somewhat in the way we're parenting. Mm-hmm. We're parented.
Yeah.
Or sometimes reactionary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes if our parents were this, what are we likely to be?
Yeah.
More permissive. And if we grew up with very permissive parents, we might be tended to be more controlling. So what's kind of the... Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say, or it could, like, because I had parents that were pretty strict too, and I know what I did with a little bit of freedom that I was given. Right? So
you're like,
that's kind of like, maybe I don't want to give my kids that freedom.
You guys think, is there a strength or weakness to being kind of a larger or smaller circle within that freedom?
Yeah. Well, I think as kids get older, the freedom that you give changes.
Yeah.
Like, would you let your 4-year-old stay out with a friend until 11 p.m.? I mean, clearly the answer, I would hope, would be no. Yeah, now we're at a point like, you know, we have a daughter in law school, so we just give her advice.
Yeah. We wrote a book one time and it described it that way, the cone of freedom. It's like it's very small at the bottom, and as they age, right, hopefully it grows wider and wider. That's right. So it can change. It can be different for your kids of different ages. Right? So that's a great way to think about parenting is as they age and as they demonstrate their ability. Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
go ahead.
I was going to say, and it does also change based on how the child does with the freedom they're given. You know, if they steward a little bit, you give them a little bit more and they steward, but if they start to abuse the freedom, then you have to pull the reins back.
Right. So it's not necessarily age that determines when they progress. It's maybe kind of maturity, and right? Can you think of any ways that you would kind of, what are some red flags or indicators that maybe you're giving your children too much freedom? Or maybe just hypothetically that a parent that you know, a friend.
I think one thing I'd look for is who do they look for influence in their lives? So if my kids aren't coming to me, that, let's say, going to you, or Nate Phipps, or something like that. I mean, it's easier to get freedom in that because they're seeking counsel from the right people.
Yeah, yeah.
If they begin to make really poor decisions, like with their friends, and that's often a tell.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's why, like, whenever I see my kids in college, I want to take their friends out for lunch because I want to get to know their friends.
Yeah,
because it's a big tell.
Yeah.
And if you see that they're making good choices with their friends and who they choose to spend time with and counselors, it's a little bit easier to kind of like, okay, they're around some good people.
Yeah. Other things? Signs or flags that you think maybe I'm indeed too permissive. Think about it. On the other hand, can you think of anywhere maybe you're being a little too restrictive? What would be some signs that might show up in a family's behavior, the kids' behavior, parents' behavior?
Being very secretive.
Like the child's being secretive. Yeah. They're afraid of the parents knowing all their behavior. Things
parents jumping all over them for something they could do, and all of a sudden just you have to be here at home right now.
Yeah,
like what happened?
Yeah, maybe a change of the expectations, right? That they were allowed to do something, all of a sudden they're not, without any reason maybe. Yeah.
If your child isn't developing decision making skills,
yeah, and they can't decide anything, and maybe they show fear and anxiety. So I will say, I've been a teacher for many years, and I kind of see symptoms of some of these.
Yeah.
A common expression here, you know, doesn't matter, my parents don't care, I can do anything, right? And it's kind of they're partially bragging, but they're partially sad, like they really say my parents don't care, in a sense, right? So they realize that parents aren't really involved at all. And then, with this, a lot of times, if parents are very kind of controlling in that sense where it's kind of a sin to do this or do that, it's more like really high performing. So if you have a super high standard that if you fail to keep this GPA, if you fail to do this athletically, if you fail to do this, you're in big trouble. You're losing everything. You know, all your privileges are removed, that kind of a thing. And so there's this anxiety you'll see in the kids where they, like you're saying, they can't make a decision, they can shut down, they lose it when something doesn't go the way they're supposed to go. They don't do well in the class or something like that. So when you have these really, really narrow expectations for your kids, it makes it extremely difficult for them because we're already sinners that can't fit into God's, can't follow God's law. And if you're making that even more narrow, it's even more difficult. Kind of brings up what you're talking about with our kids as they're getting older. Mm-hmm. What point do children no longer have to obey their parents?
When they're out of the house.
When they're out of the house. That's a good question. That's a good. You got any scriptural support there?
First mom, verse two.
That's good. Yeah, when they're out of the house, there's some good.
I think it's even more than out of the house, but it's also more than like, it's more of I'm not on their dime anymore. Like I'm completely independent in my finances and every area of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of speaks to the house being more like just the provision, not necessarily just the physical building. But when they're out of the house, meaning that they've formed their own kind of independent life. And again, there's some hints in there. Any scriptures about when they're no longer children to obey their parents? Can you think of anything?
Leaving.
Yeah, so, and I think in our culture there's a little bit of, can be a gray area, because you have 18 is kind of the governmental age, but you have some 18, 19 year olds who are still living at home, or maybe they move out but parents are paying for everything, where they haven't really kind of formed their own house, formed their own life. And you also have the discussion of, you know, that idea of Genesis. When they form their own family, that's a kind of a clear break.
Yeah.
That now they are their own household. But up until that point, how much are they still dependent on mom and dad? Any other thoughts? Win? Yeah.
Yeah, I'd go with the, I mean, as long as you're financially entangled with your parents, I mean, they're going to use that leverage if you're making a really bad decision.
Yeah.
Like if they want to join a cult or something like that and say, I want to be an LDS member. Mm-hmm. I mean, not in my house,
right,
and not on my dime. You know what I'm saying? Of course, when somebody's making a truly bad decision, you will do everything in your power,
right,
to have it. And the financial piece of it would be part of it. Now, it might be, I'll stop paying for your cell phone bill because that's it. But
mm-hmm.
for you to be truly free and have that clear expectation of freedom, there really does have to be financial independence, completely financial independence.
Yeah, and I would say, like in the scripture, you have financial dependence that the children have, and so long as that's there, the parents are going to still have some authority.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, when you think about the man leaving the father and mother united to his wife, that biblically, when that happens, the man becomes the new leader, mm-hmm. provider, protector for the wife. But before that, that still remains her father for the most part. And so with daughters, I think most fathers kind of feel that responsibility, mm-hmm. even when their daughter's 18, 19, 20, to provide and lead and protect and help that transition take place. Okay. So now let's go to the promise. So that your days may be long in the land that the Lord has given you. So let's go to Exodus 20 and read that commandment again. So remember, this is in the midst of God's 10 commandments. In verse 12. No? Mason, you got it?
Yes.
Okay. 20:12.
Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you.
Yeah. So what does that mean? What do you think that means, that your days may be long? Is it just long life, or what does that mean?
Continued obedience to the Lord from generation to generation. So that on the parent side required the Deuteronomy 6 kind of passing down, speaking of the law and these things when you sit down, you lie down, and when you're awake, and when you do all this like
mm-hmm.
teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And on the child side, it requires honoring your parents and like receiving that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so remember, this was the command given to Israel. And like Tim was saying, it's part of that passing that on. So how does that work its way out, like in their lives? Why would that make such a big difference? Of like question B, why would honoring them prolong Israel's habitation in the land? Think about all the commands that are given in Exodus and Deuteronomy.
When they're obeying their parents who are obeying the law,
mm-hmm.
they're going to be not sacrificing to false gods.
Right.
But is that honor also equal obedience? Is that the same word? Or is honor different than obedience in this?
All right. What do you think?
I'd say it's obedience and more.
Obedience and more. So I think Dan would say it's honoring is more than obedience. Would you say that?
You can ask for wisdom from your parents, and you can honor them by being willing to go and ask them for an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you won't agree with what they tell you, and so you can still honor them but not obey their wisdom, because it's just not something that you can align with, or you can take parts of it but not. And sometimes you just can't take all of it, depending on the situation.
Okay.
Like if their advice isn't biblical, obviously you shouldn't take it.
Okay. So you could, if their advice wasn't biblical, you could disobey them, but you could still honor them by
being willing to talk to them at the very least, just to get their opinion.
Mm-hmm. Not speaking ill of them is
mm-hmm.
kind of one way we think about honoring. You could, I mean, in those situations, you could think about like how, again, wives can honor an unbelieving husband by, you know, not sinning, but also not running him down.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the general context is to adults, right?
Mm-hmm.
The recipients of the command. So there is a sense where even when you're older, you need to honor your parents, and to a certain extent, that's something that's good for your kids to see.
Yeah, so that kind of goes to your point, is that Dave's mentioning that the command's really given to these adults to honor their mother and their father.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes beyond just obeying when you're in the house. And I think what Tanner said is a big part of it is that that's more than sometimes just those years at home. It's that transferring of the faith and transferring of the their position, their relationship with God throughout their entire generation, from parents, children, and grandparents, all the way through from beginning to end. But yeah, I mean, honoring them, obeying them, that's going to generally bring blessing or blessings to Israel. God gave them many promises about how if they obey him, they'll be blessed in the land. When they disobey him, they'll be cursed in the land. Let's read this next passage. It's a great parenting passage.
Yes, love it.
Especially if you were in Israel at the time. Don't apply this one today. It's not to the church. So Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21. Anybody want to bravely read this one out? Got it?
If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to him, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives. And they shall say to the elders of his city, "This, our son, is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear.
Wow. Okay, so let's just reiterate. What do we know about the son here?
He's rebellious.
Glutton and a drunkard.
Stubborn. Rebellious, glutton, and a drunkard. So probably not like 3 or 4 years old. Okay, it could be an older, stubborn, rebellious, glutton, drunkard. There's a few more descriptors.
Will not listen to
discipline. Will not obey, right? And will not listen to discipline. So not only, it's not like he's just sinning and like, oh, he's sinning. They've spoken to him, they've disciplined him, spoken to him, disciplined, right? They bring him the elders, right? So, and then Ezekiel 22:7, right? They have treated father and mother lightly within you. The alien they have oppressed in your midst, the fatherless and the widow they have wronged in you. So why was that? Why did God give this command? Why is this such a big deal in Israel?
They're supposed to be a holy nation, a set apart nation. They have people who are not obeying their parents, but logically they're not going to obey God. They're not going to obey God. They need to be cold.
Yeah, I think you made a connection, right? If they're not going to obey their parents, they're not going to obey God. I think one of the key things is that like all of our authority structures, when you think about children and parents, they kind of set up the foundation for the ability to obey any other source of authority. And if you have a child that has never, ever learned and will not submit to their parents, it's very unlikely that that child is then going to miraculously develop obedience to their spiritual leaders or to the government or to their, in our case, you've got children to parents, you have believers to elders, you have citizens, to government. You have all these sources of authority. And if there's no authority built in the family, it's very unlikely that they're going to, right? And it's very likely that on the opposite side, they are going to be rebellious. They're going to lead them astray as they grow and get older, stronger and bigger. We often, when there's been times where we've been working with establishing authority with our own kids, we talk about this is important, and whether you're getting a spanking or whatever the consequence is, if you continue this behavior when you're older, the consequences to you and to everyone else will be much worse. The punishment will be much worse. The damage will be much worse. If you hit your sister when you're 5, that's not as bad as when you're 25. The damage is going to get a lot worse. Yeah,
I think about how they lived in a sustenance culture. Like, it was, you were living on a very slender thread.
Yeah.
And you have a son who's not working, so it's not adding to the value of the home. Mm-hmm. If anything, he's drinking all your wine,
eating
all your food, and when you tell him to pick up after himself, it curses you out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, there is a very real, like,
destructive,
like, he's destroying the family, mm-hmm. destroying the family, their means of making a living and even surviving.
Yeah.
And if his example catches on, there'll be even more of that.
Yeah, you guys maybe could think about this in the context of the home. It's definitely true, like you said, about catching on in society. It's true in the classroom. Is if you have one rebellious person, and that person is not disciplined and brought under subjection, it spreads to everyone else. And I have a lot of peers as teachers that they have difficulty disciplining and bringing that one student kind of into submission of what they need to do, and it's then they kind of lose control of that classroom. So there is that kind of contagious effect of that disobedience when you allow sin to go unpunished, mm-hmm. when you allow rebellion to go unpunished, it affects. And it spreads. Let's go down to point G. We kind of talked about point F. Why is the maintenance of the family critical to social order? Right? Look at G. The new covenant repeats this promise in Ephesians 6. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. So, a couple of observations here. What do we see kind of coupled together, right? In verse 1, what's the command? Children are to obey. And then right after, he says, for this is right, honor your father and mother. So he's starting to say that, at least with in this scenario. But here, who are the recipients? Who is the command to?
Children.
So in the original, we have honor your father and mother, given to all the adults. And now he's saying specifically for children, that equates to obedience, okay? And what is the blessing and the condition here? How will you be blessed, and what's the condition that has to take place? What's the blessing?
That it may go well with you.
Okay. And that's the same, or what we had, or different? From before.
Before it was talking about, like, so that your days may be long.
Yeah, and I think we get both here, right? He kind of expands. So in the same way, it's obedience is how you honor your father. But here he says that it may go well with you, kind of adding to, and that you may live long in the land. Right? So going well with you kind of goes back to that idea that things will go better. There's blessings along with obedience. All right. And let's get into, this is kind of the details. We talked about this maybe the other day. We'll just kind of review it. What does it mean for a child to obey? And you don't have to put the word child in there. What does it mean to obey? Whether it's your parents, obeying God, obeying the authorities. What does that mean? Or you could say, what does it not mean? There's a couple different ways people said it. Usually there's kind of a threefold elements that make obedience?
All the way, right away, the happy way.
Oh, that's my favorite one. The other day.
All the way.
I never had people told that.
No.
My siblings.
Tyler.
Yeah, Tyler.
No.
We're going to tell him. We threw you under the bus, Tyler. I can't remember. There was somebody else that had a different way of saying this from the other day, but yeah, all the way, right away. So can we think of examples biblically where somebody kind of partially obeyed, but they didn't have one of these elements, and God kind of pointed out that this was disobedience? Yeah, Saul, right? Saul, he was supposed to destroy everything, and he destroyed kind of the worthless stuff, kept all the good stuff, right? So partial obedience is disobedience. Okay, any other examples?
Okay. I think about Israel in Malachi, where they offered deformed and sick animals,
yeah.
You know, the worst of their flocks.
Yeah.
So technically, yeah, it was an offering, but it wasn't worth much. So
right.
It wasn't really all the way. It wasn't with a happy heart.
Yeah, it wasn't all the way. It definitely wasn't a happy heart.
Yeah.
Right? It was kind of reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
Moses also in the wilderness when he's told to touch the rock and he smacks it.
Strikes it. It wasn't exactly a happy heart with which he struck the rock. That's right.
Uzzah maybe might have a happy heart, but did it the wrong way.
Did it the wrong way. Yeah. He was trying to move the ark, but... Where's that?
Ananias and Sapphira.
Oh, yeah. And when the giving and the... Mm-hmm. And I think with them, right, theirs was not necessarily the keeping back, but like the public lying, right? The lying about it, right? I've done this.
But what about the people who tried to carry the ark?
Yeah, that's like, that's, you're talking about Uzzah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reached out. So like, not doing it kind of the way in which you're prescribed. So
the
when
Pharisees,
it comes up, what's that?
The Pharisees, they tithe and they don't neglect the weightier matters of the law, righteousness and justice.
Yeah, so when that comes down to parenting, and when you think about like your expectations for your children, that's kind of an important way to define for both you and for them, our natural tendency is to really minimize what it looks like to obey and to kind of take away all the expectations and kind of give God this partial obedience that's reluctant sometimes. And so to teach them that obedience to God looks like doing it exactly the way he wants, right, all the way, and not delaying in doing it, not waiting and saying, I'll obey you next week, God, or being reluctant, having a grumbling, bitter, complaining heart, right? So that expectation we can pass on to our kids in the way that we expect them to be obedient. Can you think of examples of children who are being partially obedient? This could be a fun one. How could they be partially obedient? You tell them to do something. How could they be partially obedient?
Only doing half the dishes.
Okay, I did some of the dishes. I said do the dishes, right? It's going to be hard. I'm sure I won't be able to think of any personal examples from my own life. Maybe from friends. Yes?
When we were in high school, my dad said that he wanted us to, like, if we ever finished a snack or something like that, that we need to make sure we threw it away. And so he called it lazy empty because we would eat all the snacks except for the last one, then I'd leave it out.
You didn't have to throw that away. I didn't finish it.
So he called it, he said that's lazy empty.
Lazy empty. That's so true.
Yeah.
Wise
We'd
man.
Have a teaspoon of milk
yeah.
in the carton.
No one wants to finish it. We always would have like four open boxes of cereal and they all have like two flakes in the bottom. I don't want to finish it. Yes?
When you said the full laundry, but then it would just
end
up in the closet.
Oh, yes. That's some real stuff right there. Need yeah, I mean, it seems funny now, right? But at the time, right, when you're parenting, it's just a teaching moment, a teaching opportunity. Yeah.
Or the clean your room. To whose standards?
Right, right. Is this mama clean, or is this kid
daddy
clean?
Daddy clean, yeah.
No, daddy clean, yeah. Whatever.
We had like three standards in our house.
Just to say, there might even be a difference between mom and
dad. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's, and when you talk about disobedience, there is a question in terms of whether something is willful or whether they're ignorant, right? When they're ignorant, that's a place for training, right? Here's a place for discipline. So if my kids don't know what I mean, and I say clean the room, and it is clean, okay, well, do you know why it's not clean? Can they tell? So if they're willfully not doing something, they know they can do it, and they've demonstrated they can do it, that's sinful disobedience. If your child has never demonstrated that they can successfully do the thing that you're asking them to do, and can't verbalize what it is, right, there's an inability here, then that's a place more for training, teaching, demonstrating. Okay, I mean that all the laundry goes onto the shelf, not into your closet, or whatever it is. And so this is kind of a real question that you, as parents, kind of what we're talking about with the cone, right? As your kids get older and older, they're able to do more. That's something that's an ongoing, constant discussion. Can they do this? Can they fulfill this expectation? Have they demonstrated that? And is this a place to train them, or is this a place where they are being? And the kids will usually lump everything into this. I didn't know. I didn't hear you. Kids have bad hearing when they're young.
And there's a, like, if you give a 5-stage process, yeah, I want you to pull out the logs, then use the chainsaw to cut it into circles, then split it with an axe, and then stack it on the right side of the house, not the left side. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Give a pretty complex
right.
process, and they skip a step or something
right.
like that because they're five.
Right.
You know, that might be a little
right.
bit different.
I mean, you did get them the kids' version of the chainsaw.
Chainsaw, yeah. They've worked a chainsaw.
They're
yeah.
good with that. Yeah, I mean, that's real. That's the mental, physical ability of your kids are different as they age, and so they usually start out where you need a lot of this, and as they get older and older, that becomes, okay, they know, they've done it, I've seen them be successful many times, I told them to do it this time, and they just didn't do it, right? Then it becomes more clear as they demonstrated obedience, what disobedience looks like.
So how do you measure when is an inability, when is it that they can't do it or they won't do it?
Yeah.
I mean,
how do you
determine that?
Yeah. I've got my own answers. Anyone have any parents out there? How would you measure? The question is, they can't do it or they just won't do it. Think. Anybody got any ideas? Kind of have the how we would value it.
Repeated.
So let's say like an example.
Like you've corrected, you've trained, and then they keep doing it over and over again.
They keep doing the disobedience?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Doing the thing that they've been taught over and over again.
Okay, so if they repeat doing it, okay, but you said they've been.
Trained.
They've been taught and trained. So for one of the ways to tell is, again, whether or not they've ever clearly demonstrated they can do the task, right? You've trained them. I want you to be home by 2:00. They get home at 9:00. Oh, okay, you can do it. Do the dishes. So you train them, and you've witnessed them do it multiple times, right? So one of those aspects is there's such a big investment in training your kids. Now, I don't know if we've ever used the term around you, but in one of the books, they talk about when they're really little, you have German Shepherd parenting, where you teach your tiny little kids to stay, right? Or to come when I call you, right? And that, if you don't get that, it's going to be hard to get anything else, right? So just sit right there, don't move, right? Or come here, and then they run away, right? Well, that's not a good... So, like, each one of those, once they demonstrate, right, that, come here, and they come right away, okay, look, you could do it. Every time after that, unless there's some unusual circumstance, so, right, there's some loud noise, and they didn't hear you, right? So you really have to work at understanding your kids' abilities, and because as those abilities change, what makes sin and disobedience, that changes because they're able to do more, therefore the burden of what they're expected to do kind of goes up. But I will say that training can be a really positive thing. We really made a note to, whatever it was we were training them to do, we did it when we were well fed, when we were rested. Mm-hmm. We could give a lot of praise when they did it correctly. I think in that whole come here thing we would do, Carissa would have the kid at the other end. This is like, they could barely walk sometimes. And, you know, they were in that running away stage. And we'd say, okay, you're going to go to daddy. Come here. And then, you know, and when they did come, then, yeah! Okay, let's do it again. Yeah! And they get a little faster, right? More reward, more praise. Okay, you can do it now, next time. Right. So, if you're going to give a summary, right, point H right here, why does God want children to live under their parents' authority? What's the main idea behind it? If you're going to summarize it to your kids or to another set of parents who is trying to figure out how to be the authority, what's the main point?
I think protection. I think there's protection physically, spiritually, emotionally, all of those things. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge one, right? Protection. Parental protection.
Most adults would go to jail for the things that kids do to each other.
That's right.
So there's a protection of future consequences, protection of other people.
Mm-hmm. God makes them small and weak so that we can protect ourselves from them.
Yeah.
when they're young. Yeah.
But it's protection of society too, because mm-hmm. that carries over when disobedient kids become disobedient adults.
Yeah.
It wreaks havoc on a society and mm-hmm. disobeying laws and not protect, what's the word, honoring any authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is kind of the defense of parenting authority. And I think you would also say he creates authority so that we can lead them. It's kind of the offense, right? He wants us. God created that authority so that there is someone in those kids' lives mm-hmm. to teach them, to train them. And that authority, without that authority, they are not going to learn anything because they're not going to do the things that you're teaching and training them to do.
Yeah. I also think it's important. I've been listening to a podcast on gentle parenting.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, and I think part of it is where they get it wrong is they think that children are inherently good, mm-hmm. and they'll just figure it out on their own.
Right. Follow their heart.
Yeah, but authority is something that no one is born embracing, mm-hmm. except for Jesus, right?
Yeah.
So even like learning how to be under authority, seeing the goodness of authority, recognizing the value, like even our own government. I mean, I disagree with some of the laws, but really 99% of the laws, if you were to really look at the catalog of all of them, like mm-hmm. theft, property mm-hmm. laws, all that other stuff, are really good laws.
Yeah.
They protect our society and they protect us from other people. They protect mm-hmm. ourselves from making yeah. terrible decisions.
Yeah, that aspect, that protection. A lot of that is, again, it comes down to what you're saying, bringing under and accepting authority. That, like Dave was saying, none of us are born wanting to be under the authority. We all want to be our own authority. And so long as we are under no authority, we're destructive to the people around us mm-hmm. and to ourselves. And really, strength that lacks control, right, is destructive in nature. And so that the goodness of having parental authority is that it takes that strength and it harnesses it to be used to be a blessing, to protect, to serve, to honor, to do all these things. But none of that can happen unless we are brought under an authority, both as parents and as kids. All right, we've got some time. We'll hit some of these thought questions. What does the fifth commandment teach us about the nature of the obedience God expects from our children? Let's see, what do you think? What's the fact that it's one of the Ten Commandments? What does that say about the nature, the type of obedience? It's important, right? It's important. You could say it's similar to obedience to God. He equates it. Obedience to me means honoring.
Yeah, it's when you look at the placement of it, it's mm-hmm. the first. You have like the table of like obedience to God and then obedience to or love of man.
Yeah,
right?
love of God, love of man.
It's kind of the bridge between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Where I think honestly, for like a 2-year-old, they can't really conceptualize God. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So they don't really have like a way of understanding this invisible supernatural deity. Mm-hmm. But their obedience to their parents, that's basically like the God of their world,
yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I keep hitting on it, but when you think about how God created us to relate to Him, right, to love God, and then the other commandments to love our neighbor. All the ways in which we love our church, all the ways in which we love our schools or our government or our society, all of those are built around this ability to love one another in our family. And for young kids, right, that's the first primary place where all of that is learned. And that those interactions, that view of authority, that way of how to love God by loving others in the family is the way in which children grow to learn to how to relate to kids at school or to relate to the government or to relate to their church leaders or their Sunday school teachers. And so that is the foundation. That's why, like, if you've been here, if you have kids that have grown up here or are in Sunday school right now, we really encourage in Bible study and in Sunday school to say, how did my kid do in class today? Or for teachers to say, you know, they really were kind of mean to this kid today, or they bit so-and-so. You know, like, try and have an open line of communication between all the areas in which your kids are interacting, whether it's your school teachers, your church leaders, so that they're kind of shaping and you're seeing how they're being, how they're acting, how they're obeying, and whether or not they're carrying that obedience outside the home, right? Whether they're taking those. We had one child that we were trying to train to say hello and look at someone when they say hello back to you. When they say hello, you say hello. And this child, maybe try and be, this child would come to church, and someone in our church would always, was very friendly, would say hello, and they would glare at them. And this child would get some discipline, and we would come back, and they would get a chance to say hello. And they'd get some more talk and some more discipline. And this older person eventually, he said, I felt like, I don't know if I should say hello to this kid, because I knew if they didn't respond well, then it was going to be a difficult morning. But they did. They were a great encouragement to Carissa and I, because they said, we're behind you, we support you, we love that you're parenting and disciplining your kids. And eventually, this child said, hello. You know, like, they worked their way up. They they got to right away, and I think eventually they made it to Happy Heart there at the end. But, yeah.
I know with our kids, like, every one of them, except Amberly, went on obedience strikes.
Oh, yeah.
So, and they would wait for opportune moments to, while we're having company over, mm-hmm. this is a great opportunity to see if I really have to eat my food.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And
strike at your weakest moment.
Strike at, or... Okay, the shopping cart is full. maybe now is the time to throw a tantrum to try to get some candy.
So
they're smart little kids that kind of know when to push
the buttons.
Yeah, and I would say there's some battles you just really have to win. And if you win it now, you won't have to fight it later.
Yeah. And a lot of this kind of conversation, these are conversations I would really encourage you to have on a regular basis with an older or just another set of parents who have kids a little bit older and ahead that can just walk you through, okay, this is what's going on. Let's encourage one another. This is what you should do. We've gotten a lot of counsel from David Becky and from other parents as our kids were young about, okay, here's the plan of attack. And, right, you just strategize. Okay, we're going to, next time we go to the store, we're going to plan on this. Right? We'll plan on that.
I think there's, even just in my own personal growth of learning that somebody who is shy is very self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
Never really understood that concept until later in life, probably even from here.
Mm.
But you obviously have children who have different bents.
Right.
More timid and shy, and then others who are going to walk in a room and just, these are their people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing there. And so just, the importance of really training on that, but training why, why it's, it's selfish, it's not loving, it's, those type of things are really, really important. So then we as parents have to understand that, come to that understanding before we can train our children in those ways.
I think that's something, again, if you're blessed, you're also, it's also a difficulty if your first child is very compliant, because you think you're the greatest parent in the world, and you're ready for child number two, and often they're not going to be the most, right? But because, like you're pointing out, every child has its own sense of how compliant or rebellious they are, and so it takes different lots of wisdom as parents to figure out how to best parent, right? Train up your child in the way that he or she should go. It's difficult. And it will look differently, like you're talking about, the coming in, if they're shy versus very outgoing. It might be really easy for that particular thing for our kid to say, hi, but there's something else that for them is just a real challenge. Right?
Yeah, and just one more rule of thumb. Like Becky would always tell me, what would happen if we were to add a one to their age? Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Like, this is disobedience at 4. What would it look like at 14?
Right.
Or 15 or 16? And that was a very motivating thought.
Yeah.
If you don't do it when they're young, you're
the trajectory.
The trajectory. It gets harder to correct the older they get.
Yeah. And it also, that kind of principle, it's extremely motivating in the negative of what you want to avoid, and also in the positive.
Yeah.
If they can learn to submit and be obedient and joyful, happy heart, you're going to reap so much blessing and fruit when they're older and they're loving their siblings and they're contributing to the family and they're serving and they're doing all these things. And you, if you don't choose to do the work when they're young, it's going to be a lot of work later on.
Yeah. Their grandparents will like them better if they're obedient. Let's just be honest.
It's true. And everybody else will too.
Everyone else will too, yeah.
All right, this is a good place to stop. I think where we'll start next time is, why are many parents reluctant to claim parental authority? So let me pray for us. What a joy, Father, it is to just learn about parenting and to talk about it. And the gift of the family is an amazing gift, the way you've designed it, structured it, the way that you created marriage, the way you created a man and woman to come together and produce another child, an image bearer made in your image. I pray that you would help each one of us, those of us who have children who have left the home, those of us who have children who we're raising right now, and those who yet to marry or have children. I pray that you prepare each one of us to know in the family of God how we can help one another to be obedient and honoring to you in the way we parent, and that would be a blessing to our children and, in effect, a blessing to you and to the world. And I pray that you just continually guide and encourage and strengthen us in doing so. In your name.